Hi, my name is William Villalobos. I'm a senior petroleum engineering student here at Texas A&M University.
Texas A&M University, where's that out of?
Texas A&M University is in College Station by Houston.
Okay, great, great. I get confused sometimes with my Red Raiders and my Houston Cougars and all kinds of different March Madness teams and college football teams, so I usually like to start with a little bit of geographical context. And this is a follow-up interview, actually, because last year when The Crude Life was at NAEP, our correspondent, our news correspondent, Matt Hill, interviewed William about this event. I believe it's about this event he's about ready to have right now. So let's go ahead and part deux here for the interview. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. It's a little cold outside, but no, just staying warm. My little one, he didn't go to daycare today, so hopefully we don't hear him screaming to the walls or something.
Little one, well, you're not too old yourself.
No, I'm 27 now.
Oh, and that old? I would have never guessed that. No.
Yeah, well, thank you. And he is about 2 months now. And so he started going to daycare last week, and it felt a little different having him away from home. But his mom is at home too, so all is good.
Okay, and by the way, we're also doing this on Zoom video. So, William, if you see my shoulder lean in, that's just me leaning into the mic. I don't have the camera on my phone situated in the best possible way, I guess. So I apologize if that's what you're wondering on the Zoom video. Let's talk a little bit about ESG. But before we got on to this interview and hit record, you said something to me that was very interesting because I went through a similar experience, and I kind of go through this experience on a regular basis being in Fargo. Now, being in Fargo, North Dakota is much like being in Boulder, Colorado, much like being in Austin, Texas, much like being in New York or California. William used to be an Uber driver, which tells me he ran into a cast of characters. So all kinds of different opinions, all kinds of different walks of life. So, William, talk to me a little bit about your experience as an Uber driver in relation to the oil and gas world.
Yes. So it actually started Uber driving about 2 years ago. And this is when I first met my wide variety of people. In College Station, there's a lot of people that love oil and gas, and then there are some that don't. And so what was interesting to me was some of the questions I was getting from some of my clients is I would have to ask, answer, what is a petroleum engineer? What is fracking? What are some of the dilemmas with seismic induced activity? And so from that, I eventually had a question of how does the industry, academia, and regulators interact? And during that same time, there was actually a protest, an anti-oil and gas protest on campus. I think it was like Aggies for Climate Change. When I was the chairman of IEDC, International Association of Drilling Contractors, on campus, when we were presenting to the freshman class, I remember this young lady, as soon as my director told her that we're a professional oil and gas organization, she just stuck her hand in her face and walked off. And so given that background from my clients, the protest, and that young lady, I felt like I had to do something. Hence why I organized the HEC summit I had back in April with Commissioner Craddock, and now my ESG summit with Commissioner Will McAdams and Texas Railroad Commissioner Wayne Christian.
You know, it's interesting listening to your story because I don't come from oil and gas. I come from agriculture and the media, actually. And when I started in the oil and gas industry with the Bakken boom and all this other stuff, there's really so much going on from a media standpoint. Okay, so for my professional career, there is innovation that is impacting the globe right in my backyard. There is a refinery being built for the first time in the United States in over 50 years right in my backyard. So I was compelled, out of sheer professionalism, to go out and cover that industry. So when I was covering it from a non-political standpoint, from a science standpoint, and from an entrepreneur standpoint, I was getting bombarded by all this negative rhetoric, if you will. This like you're talking about, people would leave the room and they would sling linguistic daggers at you, and you'd be like, what's going on here? Where is this coming from? And it was more confusion on my part to where I felt compelled to stick up for the industry because I wasn't seeing the same things that they were seeing. I was seeing more of the positives and the long-term vision that was happening than really this short-term, oh, look at the smokestack type of a mentality. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes. And my introduction to oil and gas, so back up here, I came to the U.S. when I was 6 with my mother and older brother. She remarried to an oil and gas businessman. She's a doctor. And through that experience, he eventually took me out to locations. When I got old enough, I started working with him in developing pipelines and surface facilities. And so through that experience, I fell in love with the technical and social aspects, hence why I wanted to become a part of it. And a big incentive was how oil and gas is the same thing all over the world. And so being a doctor coming from Peru to the U.S., you aren't able to transfer your license unless you study all over again. And so seeing that limited area of operations was another reason I chose petroleum engineering at Texas A&M.
For me, a lot of it was the environmental aspects of it. We talked about the industrial forest, how, you know, the critical pipeline system, a drip line system, and plastics when it comes to water. There's so many different ways, water holding tanks and stuff. There's so many different ways that the coexistence of the two working together made the planet better. At least that's what I saw. So let's transition into action. Let's transition into what's happening. As I teased early, last year when the crude life was at NAEP, our correspondent, Matt Hill, he interviewed William about this ESG event we're about to talk about. Well, first of all, is that right? Is that the same event?
Yes, the Environmental Social Governance Summit.
Okay, you didn't have one like last year. This is or is this the second annual?
This is the second summit helped organize.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about this then. Let's talk about the first one and then the second one. Give us a short recap of how the first one went and then transition that one into the second one so we can cover up how I wasn't prepared for this.
The big interesting thing about the first one, well, it happened during COVID. It was all supposed to be in person, and then we had to back up and go all virtual. And so we had like about 40 attendants on Zoom. I was really looking forward to having it in person. Hence why this one, as long as COVID doesn't blow up again some way or another, it will be at the Bush Presidential Conference Center here in College Station. And it's from March 11th from 3 to 6. There's a coffee hour towards the ending.
I noticed you have quite a panel of speakers that are either going to come or join via the computer interweb. Talk to me a little bit about the speakers, the content, and, you know, how people can participate.
Yes. So just to clarify, the event is in person only. The virtual details was just like a backup plan.
I'm sorry. See, as I said, I'm glad that you're here so you can clarify this stuff for me. So let's back up for the in-person only event.
Yes. So Mr. Chang, I actually met him through my interview, internship with KM Energy. He has Wall Street experience. He's started his own company in redeveloping legacy wells. And so he's with Renew Energy. Mrs. Dahl from NOV, she's the director of low carbon technologies. Mr. Hendricks with Patterson ETI, he's the president and CEO. And Dr. Holtzapfel from the Texas A&M Faculty of Chemical Engineering. I would say out of all my interesting panelists, the most intriguing is some of the research that Dr. Holtzapfel will elaborate upon, such as carbon capture, desalination, biogas, et cetera. And so I'm looking forward to all of their presentations.
Can you do me a favor and ask a question about desalinization, either on the panel or off the panel for me? Because I'm curious at coal to see if there, if coal's involved in any way, because I've got this weird theory that I think coal is going to make a charge back and become one of the leading innovations behind desalinization, because these camping straws are made out of coal and coal takes out so much impurity. It just seems like it's got to go together for some reason. So anyway, that's a little sidebar there. I don't know if you guys get into the Shark Tank area of the ESG. Let's talk about the ESG summit. What types of questions are you going to ask? What types of, niche carbon capture things should people expect to hear about?
Yes. So the ESG summit, let's start back up here. So it is critical in determining the oil fields industry community impact while retaining stakeholder values. And the goal of this event is to educate the public about the oil and gas industry's ESG operations from the perspective of academia, regulatory, and industry representatives. And what the discussion topics from each panelist will be is how they reduce carbon emissions, employment diversity, and community involvement. For the reduction of carbon emissions is like, what are companies doing to reduce their flaring operations? For example, I remember during my internship even, we had these Bitcoin miners. They would use our would-be flared gas to power their generators, to power their farms or their Bitcoin servers. So that was something I never knew about. And it's a mutual win-win, I believe, because my boss, he didn't really care what they did with our gas as long as they bought it from us. So there's that. And then for employment diversity, it's geared towards gender equality. I mainly think about like the Western countries compared to the Middle East. So some of my classmates, say they're from Saudi Arabia or Jordan, et cetera, they don't have as many opportunities of employment there as they do here if they're women. And then for community involvement, it's just what are companies doing to shine a positive impact on their operating communities, not just for the family workers, the workers of the family, the families of the workers, but the surrounding communities itself. So, that's the emphasis of the event. So it's from 3 to 5, and then from 5 to 6, there's a reception or coffee hour. Call it like that.
So the event is Friday, March 11th, and we've got a professor from Texas A&M, a public utility commissioner of Texas, a Texas railroad commissioner, Jason Chang. I apologize if I mispronounced your company name, but I'm not familiar with what they do. I imagine he's in the private sector.
He's the guy who has Wall Street experience.
Thank you. That's what I was going to ask about. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah. And he started his own company, I think, in 2014, 2017, something okay. like that.
So there is Wall Street experience. I was going to ask you if there was any banking representation, because they're the ones driving the ship, is the banking, really, at the end of the day, the financing and the investing and all that different stuff. And then we've got a female from the private sector, National Oil Well Varco. That's fantastic. And then also Andy Hendricks, Patterson, UTI, and then also Dr. Holzapfel with Texas A&M University. So great cross-section is what I'm getting at. Great cross-section from gender to even ethnic background and even private, public, and finance. Just fantastic.
Yes, and to elaborate on the commissioners, so the reason I got the public utility commissioners to be on board as part of this summit with the railroad commissioner is because when I talk to both of them, they tend to blame each other. And so I decided to just have both of them to discuss their perspective of winterization and the potential upcoming mandates from that. So I believe there were, well, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to talk about it, but just be aware.
You didn't tell me I should have had a different sort of rumble in the Bronx voice going, because we got Commissioner McAdams and Chairman Christian live Friday, March 11th, from 3 until 5 o'clock, and then from 5 into 6, there's going to be a little bit of a social hour, but from 3 until looks like about 4:30, there's going to be discussions and panels. 4:40, keynote speech from the chairman, Wayne Christian. And then at 5 o'clock, another keynote speak from Commissioner McAdams, Commissioner McAdams with the Public Utility Commission. So again, just a great job of diversity and also representation from the different sectors when it comes to this ESG. You're at Texas A&M University. Are they teaching anything on ESG? Is it a word that you're hearing anywhere in any classroom?
Only one class in unconventional reservoir analysis.
Okay.
And with the Professor Von Gotten. And it was just like two slides. And so it was mainly from the conferences that I attended, like NAEP, OTC, et cetera, mm-hmm. Where I heard about ESG. And, when you were mentioning the keynote speakers, the commissioners, fun fact is that Commissioner Will McAdams is an Aggie. And so he was looking forward to come back and give a speech even. So.
Aggies, of course, being Texas A&M's mascot. And Aggies, is that because it's a land school, has to do with the agriculture, or does it have to do with the rocks?
So it's actually more agriculture. So Texas A&M Agriculture and Mechanics. The name is just the A&M now. And it actually used to be a military school. I think it started like in the 1800s, something like that. And so it only used to be all boys until like the 60s, 50s, 1950s.
Are you for real?
Yeah. And after that, they started having women, and we are here. We are.
Get out of here. Are you? I did not know that.
Yeah. So, do we have the Corps cadets? They call them the tradition keepers. They essentially go around with all the sports teams and essentially like a huge cheerleader group. I'll put it that way. They're military as well.
It was founded in 1876 and became the flagship institution of the Texas A&M University System in 1948. As of fall 2021, Texas A&M student body is the largest in the United States. This is according to Wikipedia. Texas A&M is the only university in Texas to hold simultaneously designations as a land, sea, and space grant institution. Huh. Boy, I tell you, I didn't realize any of this was the deal.
Huh. Yeah, and A&M actually has a drilling ship. I think it's called like the OSCE, something like that. And they show all the cores that they mine around, or not even mine, just dig up around the world.
This is absolutely crazy. The first public institution of higher education in Texas, the school opened for classes on October 4th, 1876, as the Agricultural and Mechanical College of Texas under the provision of the Morrell Land Grant Acts. It is classified among R1 doctoral universities, very high research activity. Originally, the college taught no classes in agriculture, instead concentrating on classical studies, language, literature, and applied mathematics.
Yeah.
Crazy. I didn't realize any of this before. Sorry. Yeah. I am such I love trivia and bathroom reader stuff, man. I just...
Nice. And the drilling ship name is IODP-JRSO. So the Jodius Resolution Vessel, something like that.
I didn't even realize Texas A&M is short for AMC, which is Agriculture and Mechanical College.
Yeah.
That is a new level of laziness that is just impeccable. I'm just kissing my lips right now. Oh, wow, this is fabulous. Okay, now let's get back to this ESG summit here. So what are you looking to get? What are you looking to get out of this? Because obviously you're in the oil and gas industry. You're 27 years old. You're at Texas A&M University, petroleum engineering. Was it Dimrock that you said you worked for before?
Oh, Dimmick.
Dimmick.
That was my workover experience.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. In my notes, it says Dimrock. So, okay. Sorry. Dimmick. So you've got a background in it. You've got a passion for it. You've organized this event. You're making some great contacts. You got the commissioner. You got a couple commissioners that apparently are going to throw down. And then you've got, I'm just kidding. You've got really a nice, just a nice body of work that you've put together before you graduate. What are you looking to get out of this? What are you looking to get out of, in the industry? What are you looking to do?
Well, I'm just wanting, as a student myself, to shine a positive light towards the industry. I feel like the industry has done enough for me. I think of IEDC even sponsoring students to go to Italy for their conferences. And so this is before COVID, just in case. And so, given the support that the industry has given me, I felt like that was another way I could give back to them. And so I guess hence why professional organizations support student organizations.
Right on. So, okay. And then why did you pick A&M, by the way?
Well, if you Google top petroleum engineering schools, A&M is number one. And so I think that's it. And part of the reason I think of that is because of it's so close to Houston. I know you have U of H, but you have the biggest comparator with A&M is UT. And so, I think what helps part of the development, professional development at A&M is simply the logistics being so close to the oil mecca I've been told before.
In May of last year at the Williston Basin Petroleum Conference, I interviewed the graduating editor for the Bismarck College's newspaper. And he also was oil and gas. And he said he has a very complicated relationship with oil and gas, much like you. Just as far as friends and family don't see it in the same level that you do. You're killing the planet and all kinds of different things, right? Well, he brought up an interesting thing. I asked him, what do you think the number one issue is right now in oil and gas for somebody his age? And he said wages. He said that he doesn't believe that there's equality in wages like there should be, especially for somebody graduating. That blew me away. Absolutely blew me away. I wasn't expecting that. He's right, and we had a very good discussion about it, and he knew what he was talking about, an educated man. When I'm looking at your discussion topics, reduction of carbon emissions, employment diversity, I would put his comment under employment diversity. Community involvement. Is there any one of those three, or is there anything outside of maybe these discussion topics that you are passionate about or your contemporaries at the college that stands out, amongst the environment and carbon emissions or the employment diversity, or is it the community building and empowerment?
If I was to put like a rank on it, I would say the reduction in carbon emissions, such as by reduction of flaring. I feel like it's just simply a waste of resource. Other classmates tell me the same thing. And there's potential opportunities and, in reducing those would-be flared gases. And so I understand it's all economics, but I think with this black cloud following the industry, I feel like any little bit that we do to improve on our emissions is better for society. So,
well, in closing here, I'd like to give you the final word, but I am going to ask it as a little bit of a leading question because you're talking to me like You're speaking my language. Let's put it this way. You're speaking my language. And I said, I've had a very difficult time connecting with the industry on this, to be honest. I've never had this problem with any other industry before. And so I lean to the youth now. I lean to the youth because those three topics you're talking about, environmental, whether it's in emissions or carbon capture, employment diversity, employment's a huge issue, and then, of course, community building and involvement. Those are three just huge fence posts of someone's life. So what do you want the CEOs to know from your generation, from whether it be environment is the most important or whatever, you know, hey, open up and listen to what we're saying. I was shocked when I saw that there hasn't been an oil company that has sponsored a college bowl game, I think since the 80s, and I think it was one. I don't even know if that was true. I think I might have made that up in my head just out of guilt or something. But that's an example I like to give that, you know, there's a way to connect that's outside the box. Go sponsor a bowl game so the 40,000 people in there hear Exxon Mobil Texas Bowl or whatever the case might be. It connects with somebody outside the industry. You know what I'm saying? So what do you want the old CEOs as they are looking at their legacy now? Because really, that's what we're talking about. Oil and gas's legacy right now in this moment. What do you want them to know? What should they be focused on?
Well, one of the ways you can interact with the youth, I would think, you mentioned the bowl game. So A&M is pretty big into the student organizations and the student body. And so I remember the Call of Engineering recently built a new engineering building called the Zachary Building. And if you go in it, there's multiple rooms that are sponsored by oil and gas companies. And I feel like without those sponsorships, it wouldn't be as nice as it is. I'll just put it that way. And so, and with all this black cloud following the industry, especially through the experiences that I've had on campus and around campus, Uber, I feel like more needs to be done from the not only my generation, but for the generations before me. So anything that you can do to promote how you're benefiting society while following the ESG aspects, parameters, then that's a great way to get to the next generation, I would say.
Do you, and final here as we wrap up, do you feel that this ESG acronym is here to stay with your generation?
I want to say no, simply because the reason being is because I feel like it would just change again, because it used to be HSE. I'm certain it was something before that, and now it's ESG. No telling what the next acronym will be.
It's just a sidebar from the corporate sustainability report. It's just kind of a little bit, a different version of it, really, but Each one gets a little bit more intrusive and a little bit more specific with how we are supposed to operate and behave within our businesses and our homes. That's all. I find it very, very much like that. But, you know, people think that this is, you know, evil and all these other things, when I personally think there's a lot of good thought exercises happening with this ESG stuff. So it's not done yet. We're still having these conversations. So, and what we're talking about here really is your event. We should probably plug that one more time before we end the interview here. But I'm down to 10% on my phone, it looks like, for my battery. Friday, March 11th, from 3 until 6 o'clock. It's free registration, but you have to go to the website in order to register. Or can you just show up?
Registration is highly recommended.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So, Professor, is it Sliva or Sliva?
Sliva. She's the moderator.
So there's option number 3, which I didn't say. Okay, sorry about that, Professor Sliva. She's at Texas A&M University, but she's the moderator. And then there's keynote speakers, Commissioner Rick Adams, Chairman Christian, as well as the panel discussion from private and public, and also from the finance sector. So any final thoughts, any final plugs, anything you want to put in there?
Yes. So I was mentioning before that a great way to get to the next generation is through student organizations. I've had people, other like freshmen outside of petroleum engineering, just ask me for general life advice and like, why did I choose petroleum engineering, et cetera. And so I think if the generations before me can support student organizations, not only IADC, but other organizations you feel passionate about, then that will help improve the mindset of the next generation. Yes.
IADC is what again?
International Association of General Contractors.
And
student chapter.
You bet. And you're with the Texas A&M University student chapter, correct?
Yes.
Outstanding. Thank you very much. Hey, by the way, good luck on your in-person event. And where are you holding that again?
Yes, at the Bush Center. It's actually called the Annenberg Presidential Conference Center.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Oh, yeah. So background of the place, it is... one of the founding libraries of President Bush, 43. Sorry.
Hey, that's okay. I was told there would be no math today, so we're good.
Yeah.
or history class.
I forgot the year that he was elected. It's either 41 or 43, but it's for Daddy Bush, and he's actually buried there. Behind the library, he has his own dedicated gravesite.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, how about that? Well, awesome. That's on, and it's March. Let me pull it up here one more time. Scroll down. Friday, March 11th from 3 until 6 o'clock. It's an ESG summit panel, the whole deal, free registration. IADC.org, and then it's the Texas A&M chapter from there. So, hey, man, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. And, you know, wish you best of luck. Come back and let us know how it went, too.
All righty. I appreciate it. And for the listeners, make sure to check out the website and the sponsorship packet if interested.